Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
There is no shortage of action going on with our partners at BetOnline.ag. The NBA is right around the corner, and right now, UFC, boxing, NASCAR, and international soccer have all resumed play. And BetOnline has the best odds and lines for their upcoming games and matches. Need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening live every day. BetOnline also offers hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, and the best props in the business. Visit betonline.ag on your computer or mobile device and join now to receive your welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online wagering experts.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today.
Welcome back, Pelicans fans, for another episode of The Bird Calls. Sitting in for Preston Ellis, I am David Grubb. And with me, as always, our editor-in-chief, Ali Cosell, and frequent contributor, Kevin Berrios. Gentlemen, good afternoon. How are we doing today?
Doing great, solid. David. How are you, man? I got to first give you props right off the bat. Great article you just wrote, and we posted on The Bird Rise, man.
Yeah, I owed you an opus. And I took some inspiration from Kevin. You know, if you're not doing multiple thousands of words, then it's just not right. So, you know, you dig deep into the cranium and you go and pull it out.
That's right.
You like the shout out, Kevin? Did you like your shout
out? Oh, yeah. Please? Yeah. I love being associated with hating on Ja. So that's great. it's my brand. I'm building my brand.
That's right. That's right. And that brand is Jahlil Okafor sucks. That's Kevin's brand.
I'm not going to say that.
We got to make it clear to the crew that's listening to us, right, that we don't really personally hate Jahlil Okafor.
No.
It's just
like, no.
He's not a good fit for Pelicans, especially an Alvin Gentry system. That's where Kevin's hate comes from, guys.
Yeah.
No, and also, I mean, like I said, he doesn't suck. He's very good in the low post as a technician, great footwork, great scoring ability, but he provides nothing that we need. So that's the problem.
Yeah, just if he could defend and rebound, those are the two biggest weaknesses, his defense and his rebounding. And that just, with the bigs that the Pelicans have, that is a problem they can't afford. So we're not really mean to Ja. Actually, we love Ja. I mean, he's one of the nicest guys on that roster and just is always accessible and available to you when you want to talk to him. So
absolutely.
To get that.
Fantastic human being. He really is.
Oh, just an incredible guy. But the big news, of course, is that the schedule has been released and the Pelicans have 8 games in 14 days in Orlando. Ali, first, why don't you break down the schedule, both in the order of opponents and how this is different percentage-wise from what the Pelicans had and what it just stacks up against the other teams that they're competing against for that 8th spot.
Sure, yeah. So yesterday, ESPN announced with their NBA countdown crew all the schedules for the 8-game seeding schedule in Orlando. And it really felt like almost like a draft lottery, right? It was kind of exciting. You momentarily forgot with what's going on with the rest of this world, right? The pandemic, social injustice, and everything else that's obviously more important. But hey, we learned what the Pelicans are going to be facing, and it's pretty much what we guessed, right? Vincent Goodwill at the start of last month kind of basically zeroed in on the fact that the NBA is going to choose the upcoming schedules that were still left in the regular season, in the remaining regular season, and selecting like the first, you know, pretty much 8 games that teams would play. So it pretty much falls in line with what the Pelicans got rewarded, or I should say awarded, and they're going to be playing just 2 teams with records over 500, and it's going to be the first 2 right off the bat, and the Pelicans are going to be kicking this whole event off on July 30th at 5:30 against the Utah Jazz. So following the Jazz, they'll face the Clippers. And then the meat of the schedule, I feel like, comes up after that, where they're going to be playing four teams directly in competition for the 8 and 9 seeds, right? You got to get to at least the play-in tournament if you're a New Orleans Pelicans fan. So Grizzlies, Kings, Wizards, Spurs, Kings, Magic to round it out. And yeah, David, you touched on it. The Pelicans' combined win percentages of their opponents is impressive, impressively low, because it's just under 50% at 49.5%. Now, granted, it's not as easy of a schedule as they were slated to play, right? Over the 18 remaining games, there was a lot more cupcakes like the Atlanta Hawks, the Knicks. And so that combined for about a 44.1 opponent winning percentage over those 18 games. But look, beggars can't be choosers. New Orleans got what is very fair, although a lot of national types, their first reaction was, oh, look at ESPN and NBA trying to get Zion into the playoffs to play, you know, of course, LeBron James and the Lakers. It's not true, guys. The NBA did the smart, right thing here in terms of just giving teams what was basically fair, what was left on their original remaining schedules. And so, like I said, the Pelicans have a good opportunity ahead of them to where they are going to give themselves a really good chance if they play well enough to give themselves a good chance for that play-in tournament. If they play really well, could even sneak up and maybe grab that 8th seed, because both Portland and the Grizzlies' schedules are a lot tougher, as we'll get to.
Now, Kevin, one of the things that we are waiting for is July 1st when the full rosters are announced, when teams have to put their 17-man groups together. But as we look at the schedule already, there are teams on the Pelican schedule that have significant players out for multiple reasons. You know, looking at that, who are the biggest losses for the opponents, and where do the Pelicans gain some advantages?
Yeah, I mean, I think one big advantage is that nobody has home court advantage. So you're not going on the road to play any of these games. It's neutral. But then you look at first opening night against the Jazz. If I'm not wrong, Ingles and Bogdanovich are both not playing, correct? They're not going to Orlando. So that's a huge break for the Jazz. Those are tough. Those two guys provide tough matchups for the Pelicans. And then, you know, the next game against the Clippers, if I'm not wrong, that's the second night of a back-to-back for the Clippers. So there's a chance you might not be playing against Kawhi or Paul George or both, which would also be a great advantage. And then with the Wizards, you know, you could possibly see a world. I mean, he hasn't announced it yet, but where Bradley Beal wouldn't go to this, or, you know, we already know Davis Bertans isn't going. So, and then Spurs, LaMarcus Aldridge is out. You know, there's also a chance that DeRozan decides not to play with Aldridge out, because there's not much for them, not a real shot for them to really make it with Aldridge being gone. And I don't know, is there, are the Kings missing some people too going in? I feel like I remember hearing.
Well, we don't know, right? Because they've got, what, four guys with supposedly the coronavirus, so we're not sure if they'll be ready.
Right. Real quick, those guys seem like they're going to go play.
You said, Kevin, you said Joe Ingles is out. I did not hear that. I was only aware of Bogdanovich with his wrist surgery.
He made an announcement about staying with his family, correct? Am I wrong in that? Or
I do believe Ingles said he was out. Now, I'm double-checking now, but I do believe Ingles said that he was out.
I'm pretty sure I heard that.
I thought he was going to play for some reason. Okay.
But that, again, like Kevin said, those are two huge losses offensively for them, because, you know, Donovan Mitchell had been extremely streaky this season in shooting the ball from deep. So I think, you know, you lose two consistent, and Bogdanovich, we saw it when the Pelicans
played. He's the killer. Yeah, he slaughtered the Pelicans.
I mean, what, he missed one shot the last time
he averaged like 30 points, right? In all the matchups, he averaged about 30 points and shot like 60% from the field, something crazy. So, yeah.
I mean, and then also looking at the Magic as the last game, they probably will have that, you know, I mean, the Wizards don't really stand much of a chance of catching them. And if they have it wrapped up, you might see them rest guys because the schedule is so compact just to get into the playoffs. So that last game might be a cakewalk also, you know.
Yeah, I mean, people are looking at this and their expectations that the Pelicans could go as good as 7-1. We talked about it even before the schedule released, that we were talking about maybe that a 6-2 was at least necessary to get to the play-in tournament. But now the way this is laid out, you know, certainly the criticism from people like Kendrick Perkins or other voices around the league who have said the NBA is trying to get the Pelicans into the playoffs. Well, like you said, Ollie, earlier, the matchups are the matchups, and the Pelicans actually got their schedule harder a little bit going into this. It's just, I mean, I don't see how, if you're going to invite the teams that they invited, I don't see how you can make it any more fair than it is.
No, and here's the biggest thing, though, right? People are making such a big deal about the matchups, about opponent winning percentage. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, a lot of people that I've talked to kind of behind the scenes that really know basketball, including you guys, of course, look, this is going to resemble the start of a regular season. These guys have not played basketball competitively, let alone together as a team, for months. And they're only going to have a really short, quick, what is it, about 2 weeks worth of training camp time to iron out any differences. And as we know, that's not enough. We see every year how, you know, teams get granted whatever amount of time it is in preseason training camp and start regular season, and it's bumpy play, a lot of turnovers, et cetera. Plus, Kevin's already mentioned, it's an unfamiliar court. I think that's going to be huge. You know, certain players like certain arenas, and they get used to certain rims. That's not going to be a case here. Nobody's ever played competitively that down there in Orlando and Walt Disney World. And then as we've already kind of mentioned, right, there's going to be key players out. I think LaMarcus Aldridge being out is huge, absolutely huge. I just can't foresee the Spurs make a run. And we've already mentioned Bogdanovich with the Jazz. So that really sets up. And, of course, playoff teams, why should they be pushing so their players so hard, especially out of the gates? And that's why I love the Pelicans playing their first two games against the Clippers and the Jazz, because I think they will be ramping up their players a lot more slowly, to where I don't foresee anyone on their teams playing over 30 minutes those first couple of games. If they're smart, they should monitor those minutes, kind of build it up to where, you know, they'll be in good shape when the playoffs start. So, yeah, I like a lot about this, but we shouldn't make everything be the end-all be-all for the winning percentages.
Absolutely, and I think one of the other things, too, is when you have situations like this, when you had like the 50-game season or the 66-game season, seedings become a lot less important in the playoffs, and because you tend to see those upsets because teams are still, like you said, trying to find themselves because of those shorter stretches. And with the layoff and coming back in, yeah, you don't know, and players who will choose to not come, and then, of course, the potential for players to be infected during all of this, there's going to be constant flux on rosters. And so from night to night, winning percentages will absolutely mean nothing, because these are not the teams that you played in March, February, January.
I'd also say, I think seeding, I mean, of course, seeding matters in terms of your matchup once we get to the playoffs, but it doesn't matter hardly as much this year because there will be no home court advantage, you know, because right. Like, you know, how many times have we seen an underdog, you know, get an upset in their first home game back, which that's going to be completely eliminated. And also though the underdog also feeling more pressure playing on the road in the playoffs, that's going to be eliminated too. So it's going to be interesting. I think it could go either way. I think you could see longer series because there's going to be no pressure, or there could be sweeps because there won't be that, you know, that burst of confidence and energy that teams get for their first home court game against the, you know, the favorite. So that can be, it's going to be an interesting situation too.
Yeah. And before we get to the Pelicans individually and what we want to see or should expect, and of course, and talk about the questions that the readers, or I should say on Twitter, posted towards us, I'm curious about your guys' takes on the schedules for both Portland and Memphis. Because I'll just read this off real quick. Originally, Memphis, as everybody knows, was supposed to have one of the toughest finishing schedules. It was, I believe, second overall amongst the 22 teams attending hardest. Now it's the sixth hardest when you look at these eight remaining games. For Portland, they really, I feel like, got the shaft a little bit. They had the 16th hardest schedule, so one of the easier ones to finish up the regular season. But now they've got the fifth hardest here in Orlando. So what do you guys make of that? David, if you want to start.
Well, I mean, if our argument is that the winning percentages don't matter.
No, then, but yeah, right. But just factor in maybe some of that a little
bit.
Well,
let's look at this for Portland. Portland is getting – when Portland last played, Damian Lillard was hurt. Yusuf Nurkic was hurt. You know, they were shorthanded. They've gotten time to get healthy. So you bring back a healthy Damian Lillard. You bring back – they are not the same team that they left off as. And so for them, they're getting reinforcements, and I think that makes them in a better position. I would say that, you know, yeah, out of the teams that are there, now it pretty much comes down to the Grizzlies sitting in the eighth spot now, and it's the Pelicans and the Blazers. That's the way I look at it, because San Antonio, to me, is done because of what they've lost. And I didn't have a lot of confidence, even if they were completely healthy, that they could get above the teams that are in the West. And then you look at the Kings, and again, that instability of just so many guys, it appears, just rolling in and out of having COVID. I just don't know if they'll all make the trip. So, I mean, I think it really just comes down to the Pelicans and the Blazers trying to catch up with Memphis. And I'd give the Blazers a reasonable shot, even if their schedule did get harder, because this is a team that went to the Western Conference Finals last year. They know their roles. Most of those guys have been together for a while now. And you also have a veteran guy in a Carmelo Anthony who can provide you some scoring if Lillard is off or if CJ McCollum is off. And that was something that they missed in the Western Conference Finals last year. So, I mean, I like – Portland seems fine. Memphis is just trying to hang on. And I think that they're in a good position to do so. Their goal is just make it, because stay in eight. And that's all I don't think they're trying to climb any higher. I mean, their thing is, if we can play it even and get and play who's ever nine, we think we can win one time. So I don't think Memphis is incredibly worried either.
No, they win four games. They're going to make the Pelicans basically win eight, or Portland win eight, right, to jump over them. So, yeah, I, if I'm Memphis, you find a way to win four games, and even three wouldn't be bad. Kevin, do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, I agree with that 100%. You know, I mean, I think Portland is I was glad to see. I mean, obviously, we played Portland four times already, so I wasn't expecting us to play them. But I was happy that we didn't have to play a healthy Portland with Nurkic coming back and stuff. So I think they're a team that can make noise. They're like you said, I agree that they're our biggest threat for getting into that playoff with Memphis. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're, like you said, they're a whole new team. And this is kind of a whole new start, because everybody's been off and all new starting fives. It's kind of, you know,
one thing that's also curious to me is, and David, you've mentioned this a couple of times already, is how much is this COVID-19, these cases for the Kings, going to affect them right now? We know the teams can't be working out together, right? But still, you've got to think it's going to take something away to where these players individually can't work and sharpen their skills. Like, say, Buddy Hield, right? He's one of the guys that is currently infected. And we don't know how they're going to bounce back, because everybody bounces back from supposedly from coronavirus differently. So I think that puts them at a huge disadvantage, even though, like I said, they're not going to be practicing as a team until they get to Orlando. That is if they even make the trip, like you've mentioned. Do you guys feel differently or not?
I got a counterpoint to that. I mean, I understand that, and I think that's very valid. But the other point is, they already got it and won't get it again once they're in the bubble, most likely. You know, we haven't seen somebody get reinfected, especially so quickly.
No, we have. There are reinfections now. There are people who have gotten it twice.
Really? I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
I haven't really heard about it either.
But they have antibodies, at least, so they're like more likely to not get it, whereas other teams might have a widespread infection. If you get it out of the way, maybe, you know, you're in a better situation. I don't know. I'm not a medical expert. It's just hypothesizing. But I do understand what you're saying, because me, like, I got aluminum poisoning in my early 20s, and you know, that it causes scarring in my lungs, and my lungs have never been the same since. So, you know, there's a chance that we know that COVID causes lung scarring. So, like, you know, I get out of breath much faster, my voice is much weaker, my voice gets hoarse. It's lingering things like that from the scarring that I have in my lungs, and it could be something that could affect these guys long term and obviously short term in this tournament. So, you know, it's all unprecedented, and we'll see what happens. But I could see, you know, both aspects.
Oh, God. Those are the screams I used to make when I'd cut myself shaving, you know where. But that was before Manscaped. Thanks, Manscaped, for turning my loud shrieks into multiple peaks. Look, who here doesn't get nervous about grooming their man parts? And that's why Manscaped created the Lawnmower 3.0, beautifully designed to reduce those painful nicks and tugs. The Manscaped engineering team obsesses over technology developments to provide you with the best tools for your family jewels. So many people have written in stories about how the Lawnmower 3.0 has changed their lives. They even included pics so I could see the smoothness for myself. And they aren't kidding. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you.
Just to give the context, the World Health Organization is still trying to understand why some people do get a reactivation of the virus after recovery. So, I mean, there's still that part medically, and we can, that's a good segue, actually. That part medically is, there are still so many unknowns about COVID-19. And by most accounts, and even the words of Dr. Anthony Fauci, the NBA has the best setup among the major sport leagues as they try to come back. But still, mentally, the stress of going into this bubble, quote unquote, for 3 months on any person, no matter if it's a fancy hotel, no matter how many amenities they bring into you, it is a strain to be with, you know, with the same people in a confined space generally for 3 months. How do you think that the Pelicans, a young team with some veterans, copes with that kind of situation?
I think they'll be better off than most, because a lot of these guys aren't married, don't have kids, right? I mean, what would you say? Maybe half the team, I guess, has a child. But in essence, I just feel like a lot of the players sound and feel comfortable. Even J.J. Redick, you know, it's kind of surprising to me because he's 35. He lives up in Brooklyn, so he saw firsthand and his family what coronavirus does. But, you know, I've listened to all his podcasts several times. He's kind of mentioned that, yeah, it's a concern, as well as possibly this whole event serving as a distraction, which nobody wants, from the social justice and the Black Lives Matter movement. But he seems gung-ho about going and leading the team. And we can tell. I mean, if he's lost 14 pounds during his time off, you know he hasn't been lollygagging or saying, yeah, I'm working out about three times a week. No, he sounds like he's gone balls to the wall hard. So I think the Pelicans, like I said, I'm expecting, I think all the players will make it. And I think they'll all be in great shape. And with the young legs combined with the way they play, it really, this whole format sets up well for them. This sprint to that possible play-in tournament in the playoffs really sets up really well for them.
Kevin, to that point, you know, factors like youth, like depth, are huge going into this team's. They're, you know, team. We're seeing teams sign free agents that have not played with them all year as reinforcements due to injury and already players who have pulled out. The Pelicans at least will have this continuity of their roster if all 17 guys do show. Is how much of an advantage is that for this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an advantage, but also what you were just asking about, the mental aspect. I think, you know, we have a lot of young guys who are just in college, and this is closer to being in a college situation, like living in a dorm and that stuff, than some of the older veteran players experience. So that might give us a little leg up that it's not a super far off adjustment from where they were at. Obviously, you know, you had more freedom when you're in college. You could go out and go wherever you want, but it probably feels more like a dorm situation. It's a lot like kind of living on the road, touring with a band, you know, living in a van with all the same people for weeks or months at a time. So it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt to that. But I think the younger teams with guys that are just coming out of the AAU and college program and haven't gotten so comfortable in that pro athlete lifestyle might have a little bit of advantage mentally in adjusting to the bubble situation.
I think it also helps that because there is no travel, you don't get that same amount of fatigue. You're not changing time zones. You're not dealing with red eye flights. You're not all those things. You go right back to your hotel room after the game is over. So I think that certainly helps too in recovery for the teams. And again, when you have youthful legs, I think that is going to help. I think veteran teams, like Ali said earlier, are going to try to just, unless they have a real chance to move up in the standings, are just going to try to make it to the tournament healthy. Whereas teams like the Pelicans can afford to play all out and give everything that they have in this, whether they make it or not. It's just the opportunity for them to do so is just so much greater, to just let it loose.
No, I agree. And I think that applies to every player. We've seen already, you know, I've already touched on J.J. Redick, Brandon Ingram, how much he's been working. You hear all these stories about the Pelicans. They're all positive in the buildup towards being ready for that. As soon as that start, whatever, the ball's tossed up in the air on July 3rd, it sounds like they'll be ready more than most. And that's a positive, because I keep thinking about other veterans. What do? They develop routines as they get older. That's another thing I think that we got to attribute to what Kevin already said. Younger guys kind of being more used to a college campus type of atmosphere. But I also think older players, they just have a routine, whether it's with their families, how they come into their own arenas or on the road. And that's all probably going to be distorted. And the Pelicans, they don't have that many of those vets. My biggest and most interesting thing, I think, to watch right off the bat is going to be Derek Favors, right? I mean, I can't recall one time where he looked 100% all season physically. He never resembled the guy we saw Utah over the span of a 48-minute game, right? We would say, hey, he looks a little bit better. He would have better stretches, especially, of course, after he came back in the middle of December on. But he still never looked like the Derek Favors of old. So he in an article with Tony Jones of The Athletic, he mentioned that he was taking, you know, I think about the first 2 months just to rest his body, to let it heal up. And then he was starting to work it back into shape. So I'm going to be very curious to see how he looks, you know, with his first few minutes. What do you guys think?
Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think we're all big fans of Favors and what he can bring and what he did bring even when he was hobbled. So, yeah, I mean, having that time off, I think hopefully helped him not only deal with the physical problems that ailed him, but also the mental aspect. I mean, remember, he lost his mother during the season. So, like, dealing with all that, giving him some time off, some time to decompress, I think is going to be good for him. And hopefully we do see that Favors that we saw in Utah, because, you know, we definitely need that interior presence, and we need him to be good enough that Gentry sticks with him and stops trying to go small with Zion in the middle, because of, you know, we've seen the problems that creates, because Zion's not mentally ready to play big man defense in the NBA at a high level yet. Physically he's there, but mentally he still has to pick up, you know, when to drop, when to come up, and, you know, when to switch and things like that. So it's a lot more complicated. And if he's healthy and if he's mentally engaged, then it'll keep him on the court. And that's going to be the best thing for the Pelicans long-term in this tournament.
Yeah, because
so we think I'm going to lead in for you, okay, David, set you up for your article, because I really want you to talk about all these players and what the biggest potential winners and losers of this whole scenario are. Obviously, Favors could do a lot for himself, right, by looking healthy, earning himself a contract, whether with the Pelicans or not. But, David, we just put up an article on the Bird Rights where you basically went through every player and listed kind of expectations plus how they could, you know, this whole event could benefit themselves. So why don't you go ahead and jump right into that?
Okay, I'll just do the summary because I want people to read the article. So,
sure. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, don't read the 2,200 words or whatever.
But essentially, you know, the Pelicans are in a great position overall. You talk about potentially 11 of the players who are on the roster right now as locks to come back next year, which is something that is unprecedented in this franchise's history. They haven't had the starting five return since 2004.
That blew my mind when I read that.
Since 2004. and so the opportunity for continuity means that this is a great chance for these guys to, even if they don't make it, to build going towards that season, the 2021 season, which is 2 months away, you know, I mean, after the end of this season. So I think there's a great opportunity. And for certain guys, you know, the guys, look, Brandon Ingram doesn't have anything to prove. He's going to get a max offer, and the Pelicans are either going to be the first ones to offer it or they're going to match it. I would imagine that they're going to be at his door at 12:01 or 11:01, however it works, and they will sign him. So you look at the rest of the roster, and it's really the guys who are on the second level. You know, J.J. Redick's going to be here next year. We know what he can do. There's no change there. I think for Drew Holiday, it's, is he going to play at a high level of consistency? Because we know that folks have put Drew in every trade rumor. We've done it. whether or not this is the time to move on from Drew. So you want to see if he can be 2018 Drew Holiday, postseason Drew Holiday in this situation, because that veteran presence is so vital. You go to guys like Lonzo Ball, you need to show that what happened over those several months was not a fluke. If he comes back and he's shooting below 33% from deep, if he's not penetrating, if he's cautious with the basketball rather than being aggressive, then those are things people are going to point to as a regression. But then the front court is really where most of the things you're looking for. Jackson Hayes has to show that he's learned something in this time. Same with Zion Williamson. We hope that he's been looking at film, that the coaching staff has been focusing on the mental part as much as they have the physical, because it seems that he looks great and he's ready to play. We want to see if the mental part, if he matured there. Same with Jackson Hayes, same with Nikhil Alexander-Walker, two guys who are going to get minutes because of the bodies, but again, they have to earn the trust back. Neither one of them was getting the same minutes over the final 20 games of the season that they were getting previously. So they've got to earn their way back in. Guys like Etuan Moore, this is a chance for him to prove again that he can be consistent as a shooter off the bench, and he's playing for a contract, whether it's with the Pelicans or someone else. Darius Miller, he'll probably be active. Does he get off the bench? And again, a $7 million contract that's non-guaranteed. Darius has got to show that he's healthy, that he can walk around, that he can do something and is on the road to being a contributor if he wants to have any chance of staying. And then finally, you take it, the guys who I think have the biggest upside of the most to gain during this are the two G League guys in Zylan Cheatham and Josh Gray. Cheatham can be what we thought Kenrich Williams was going to be. We know Cheatham loves to bang. He's a double-digit rebounder. He's an efficient scorer. He's athletic. We liked him a lot going all the way back to summer league. So, and then you have Josh Gray, a guy who is a scorer at the point guard position, a little bit shorter than guys like Frank Jackson or Nikhil Alexander-Walker, but more explosive. And also a guy who has shown the ability to get others involved, averaging more than seven assists a game in the G League. Those two guys will get minutes. They may not play in all eight games, but when they do, they have an opportunity to show that they could be second unit players and contributors next season, which will impact the Pelican strategy as they go into the draft. If you feel like Zylan Cheatham can be a strong backup small forward for you, then you approach the draft much differently. If Jackson Hayes shows that he's matured and can be a more vital, consistent defender, then maybe you're not looking for a big at the top of the draft. So these guys have a big will have a big impact on what David Griffin and Trajan Langdon ultimately decide to do with this roster in the offseason.
Yeah, and I'll be honest. I think practice, when they first get to Orlando and can start going up and down the court as a team, I think that whoever's really hot, like say Etuan Moore suddenly can't do nothing but splash home threes, or maybe, you know, Zylan Cheatham is showing something defensively that Kenrich Williams isn't. I think players could earn themselves or bump themselves up in a rotation. Because let's face it, we fully expect Alvin Gentry to utilize a smaller rotation in key moments and in certain games. But he's not going to be able to probably stay on the gas for all eight games, simply because all of a sudden you're going to be asking players that have been for months off, even though they're in shape, most of them should be in really good shape. It's not basketball shape. And that training camp's not going to get them in the basketball shape. So Alvin at some point is going to have to monitor a lot of these guys' minutes. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see, I think, in rotations and who maybe moves themselves up or down simply because of what maybe they'll see in practice, or maybe Alvin goes with his hunch, right? We don't know. Is he more just inclined to, well, that's the vet, or maybe that's the way we did all regular season. I'm just going to hopefully they'll find, you know, a hot streak or whatever, overcome whatever's ailing them. And I've just got to place my trust in that. It'll be very curious to see how Alvin Gentry does push those buttons. You're right, David.
Okay. Well then I guess let's talk about the coaching staff for a second. Kevin, what do you think this means for Alvin Gentry and his future? What outcome, is there an outcome that you think could mean this is the final year of his coaching tenure? Is there a way to make sure that the outcome could ensure that he comes back? Or is that, no matter what happens, do you think that decision's already kind of settled?
Yeah, I believe that they've already made that decision, regardless of how this plays out. I'm not going to speculate on what that position is, because I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I know Griffin really likes Alvin Gentry. Alvin Gentry's getting up there in age. I don't know how much more he wants to do this daily grind of coaching. You know, maybe they've talked. Maybe next year will be the year that they do the rumored plan when Ferry was the top choice of Gentry moving into a front office position, sort of a advisor role, and they bring in a younger coach, that, or their long-term coach. We'll see. I could see them also, you know, giving him a chance to have another year out there to, you know, to go out on a high note, since this team really started to upswing again towards the end of the season. And especially, you know, I think people are expecting us to at least be in that playoff with Memphis for the eighth spot based off of the schedule and the talent level on this team. But I think the decision's already made. I don't think this, this scenario will affect it. And I don't think it would be fair for the scenario to affect it, just because the scenario that they're going in, this bubble, this situation is so unprecedented, so weird, and so like built, it's like built on sand, you know, anything could collapse, just, you know, if a player gets sick, or, you know, it's just such a weird situation that you shouldn't really judge the coach on how they handled this, this run. And I think, you know, these guys are smart and they already have a plan, you know, heading into the off season. I'm sure they're going to stick to whatever that is. I don't think anything, you know, short of upsetting the world with a finals victory, I don't think anything will change.
Ollie?
Kevin pretty much nailed my kind of, I guess, viewpoint of everything too. This isn't going to make or break Alvin Gentry's future with the New Orleans Pelicans. I feel like that either Griffin's already decided he's going to eventually or soon move on, or he's going to keep him around. It's going to be one or the other. But I want to mention this, and you mentioned it in your piece, David, and I think it's super important. Look, we know that fans generally do not like or have supported Alvin over the years. And, you know, they always point to his previous record, how well he's done here in New Orleans. But let's face it, right now you need to put that pettiness away. You know, he's not only a good head coach. I don't care. You guys probably don't believe me or don't want me saying that, but he's a great human being, and he has embraced the city and the fans and really the culture of New Orleans. I love the way you worded that. So I think everybody should just go ahead and support Alvin, the whole team, throughout this, no matter what they do record-wise, right? So, yeah, that's all I really wanted to throw in there.
Before we get to the listener questions, I'm just going to ask you guys this to give your – and again, it's an impossible projection, but it's something that we have to do. Do you think that this will finish, that there will be a conclusion – that we will get through the eight games and the playoffs without some major interruption? Ollie, we'll start with you this time.
I want to say that I feel like there will probably be an interruption. I think the odds of not either a team all of a sudden getting basically hit with the coronavirus where it sidelines, like, say, 3, 4, 5 guys, or one of the stars is going to contract the disease, and therefore, you know, the NBA is just going to feel pressure to basically at least suspend play for maybe a couple weeks until that player heals. I don't know. It's just so impossible to imagine 2.5 months of this being pulled off without a hitch, with what's going on in the world, with what we've already seen in other professional leagues around the world, to where they've had cases pop up. How many times has the Chinese basketball league had to, you know, basically suspend operations? I know it's happened with the Korean baseball team. Or Korean Baseball League. And I think even the soccer, what was it, maybe the German Bundesliga, I think they had an issue too. So just seems like the odds are high when you consider the backdrop. Florida's exploding right now, and you don't foresee that all of a sudden dropping down in cases to where you're not going to be worried about people that are coming in and out of the bubble that won't be having regular testing. I'm talking about all the Disney employees. That they're going to likely probably maybe bring something in. And if it's not them, somehow you just got to think the virus is going to find its way inside that campus, because it's not a true bubble. And it doesn't sound like the NBA is committed to having a true bubble, because it just seems like too high of a cost. So, yeah, unfortunately, I fear that it's more likely than not at some point this will be interrupted.
Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I've said all along, I don't expect this to play out all the way. I mean, for all the reasons Ollie said with the virus, but also I feel like I'm the only person talking about this in the sense that this is in the middle of hurricane season in Florida. Like, that is another aspect that can make this fall apart, because then you have talking about possibly having to evacuate all these teams out of there and what's predicted to be a very active hurricane season. Then you evacuate, then the bubble's broken. Do you have to re-isolate again? Start up, how's that play out? Then it's you pushing back everything for the next season. I just don't see a world where between the virus and hurricane season, this finishes up. And I think it was a really bad choice considering, I mean, the location was a very bad choice considering hurricanes and also Florida's approach to the COVID virus from the get-go.
There is no shortage of action going on with our partners at betonline.ag. The NBA is right around the corner, and right now, UFC, boxing, NASCAR, and international soccer have all resumed play, and BetOnline has the best odds and lines for their upcoming games and matches. Need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening live every day. BetOnline also offers hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, and the best props in the business. Visit betonline.ag on your computer or mobile device and join now to receive your welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online wagering experts. Black lives matter, and we're continuing to do our part here at the Bird Calls. That's why we've created the Armchair All-American Scholarship. Thanks to contributions from Armchair, myself, Music is My Refuge, R-Anders36, Andrew Juge, Ralph Malbro, and many more, Armchair Media will be issuing four $500 scholarships per semester to aspiring Black creatives. The criteria is African-American, under 21, and in a creative field. To apply, send something you've created, whether photography, art, music, anything, to scholarship@armchairallamericans.com. We can't wait to see your application.
Yeah, to emphasize your point, Kevin, the National Weather Service thinks that the hurricane season this year will be 30% more active than normal, expecting as many as 16 named storms. And in a normal year, they're talking about 8 to 12. It could be. And as we've seen the last few years, hurricanes are getting bigger, stronger, and they're coming right on top of each other. So, yeah, that is absolutely a concern. And I think evacuation will be a major issue should something like that happen. Because how then do you get all of those players out of Orlando? How then do you get them secured in Orlando if you have a major hurricane? That is a question that I think, yeah, people do need to start thinking about more. Let's go on to our questions. We'll start with
some of them, huh, Kev? Or I mean, David.
Some.
Yeah.
But there's some that we can touch on. Cool. First, from I am James. Who do you expect to have a breakout 8-game stretch of pure dominance, i.e., playoff Drew? Start with Kevin.
Okay. I was waiting for that.
Sorry.
No problem. The most obvious answer is Zion, I guess, because, you know, we just saw how dominant he was once he got on the court. You know, he had a slow first half in his first game and then just exploded in the second half of that game and has just been offensively dominant ever since. And I just think most teams don't really have an answer for him defensively at the basket. And if he has improved mentally on the defensive end, then, you know, the sky's the limit for him. And, you know, he's just going to, I just think he's just such a unique weapon that he will definitely leave his imprint on every game offensively for sure.
Ollie.
Yeah. I mean, I can easily foresee Zion maybe averaging somewhere close to 30 points a game. I also expect Brandon Ingram to resemble the guy we saw during the first few months. I know that the biggest X factor is kind of Drew. Boy, David and Kevin, can you imagine if playoff Drew shows up, you know, where he's got not only the game, but that intensity and that kind of fire that, because he's typically normally very reserved with his feelings and emotions. Boy, if he shows any of that and how much that may inspire the rest of the team. But I'll be honest, I'm going to go with somebody that's not going to be as big as a factor, as dominant maybe, especially in a stat sheet. But I think JJ Redick, I'm expecting for him to be dominant. I think really top of the line shooters in this league can shoot on any rim. And if JJ has been basically shooting in a gym this whole time and he feels good physically, and you know, as a 13 year vet, he's going to have it. He's going to bring it. He's going to look to lead. So I'm expecting for him to really be a consistent force for the Pelicans.
I think that it's probably Zion Williamson as well, because you look at the schedule now, the way it's set up, the opponents, there's not a ton of the things that did frustrate him on occasion. There's not a ton of shot blocking outside of Rudy Gobert. And then there are not a ton of great power forwards on any of these teams. So I think, yeah, if his physical conditioning is that much improved and he's ready to go, if Zion is giving you 30-plus points a night, which is really possible because he could be playing more minutes as this goes on, he has a chance to be the most important player in the playoffs. Because like you said, if you get Ingram playing the way he was at the early part in the season when he was completely efficient and his knee wasn't bothering him.
Yeah, he was a walking bucket.
And then if you get playoff Drew on top of that, if you're getting the Drew Holiday who is not turning the ball over, who's playing efficient basketball, who's shutting people down defensively, and if you're getting just the same Lonzo Ball, 13.7 boards, 7 assists, yeah, if you're getting – if Zion ups his production just slightly and can – if he can get to double figures in rebounding, because there are going to be a lot of missed shots, rebounding is going to be huge, because that was another area of concern with Zion previously, was just that he did not do enough on the defensive glass. So if he can improve there too, he has just – I mean, again, we know his potential, but his impact now can just be – it can be so much more. Because remember, Pelicans were, what, 10-9 in his 19 games. So he was still feeling himself out. So I think, yeah, this is a true chance to go from we're figuring out each other to – Zion seizing control of that front court.
Right. Yeah. Can I just elaborate for a second too? Because I think that Zion definitely is most primed to have that sort of dominant performance, but I think the biggest factor in winning and losing is going to be Drew Holiday's performance.
Yes.
And I talked about this on the top five podcast I was on maybe like a week ago, I guess. You know, it's just like we've seen Drew struggle anytime he has to adapt to a new situation. So I'm very worried about him going into this, even though the starting five is going to be back together. There's not really change on the roster and his role doesn't change, but everything else around him has changed. And he tends to get off to a slow start when he's adjusting to something new. So that's troubling. And I just feel like the Pelicans' success is in these eight games and into the playoffs depends on what Drew Holiday you get. He's the biggest factor because we know his defense is going to be there, but his offense can be dynamic. It could be forgettable or it could be atrocious. And we just need that consistency from him. Even if we just get the forgettable or average amount of offense, that might be enough. If we have that dominant offense where he's penetrating, where he's driving, where he's crossover, step back, banging it off the window, if we get that Drew Holiday, that sort of like, you know, when I coined him the Tim Duncan of Allen Iverson's, then we're gold. But if we get that dribble the ball off your foot, you know, lackadaisical passing, if we get that hesitance to drive or that hesitance to drive, you know, then that's going to be something that I don't think we can overcome no matter how dominant the other players that we talked about are.
Yeah. It's never been a lack of effort with Drew. That's why I didn't really care for lack of days. It's just, he shows those times of being timid or unsure of the moment, or he's thinking too much, something like that. Yeah. But Kevin, I think that's a great point that I completely overlooked. The fact that this whole thing is going to be such a different environment for him. How's it going to affect him being away from his family, away from Lauren, and of course their daughter? So yeah, that could be important
because she can't come down there. You know, this is
not until the second round of the playoffs, right?
But would she even risk it then? You know, I mean, she survived brain surgery, and they have that very young child traveling from California, one hot spot, to Florida, another hot spot.
How many players are going to want to bring young kids to this, right? Yeah.
And like you said, Drew is extremely attached and you know, to his family. That is a core part of who he is. It, certainly, I think that is an X factor too, is how does his mind, you know, focus on this thing? Can they get him in? I think you're absolutely right about J.J. Redick. J.J. is going to come in and there is going to be no question of his focus. And I think J.J.'s impact on this roster as the vet with the voice is going, it has the potential to be huge. Mm-hmm. And if he comes out and he's playing the way we expect him to play, this is, he has the chance every night. He's going to be the primary scorer off the bench. Mm-hmm. And he's going to
get
his shot.
He's
going
to be near Zion and B.I. in big moments. I think that's going to be huge.
Absolutely. His intensity, his level of intensity is necessary in this. Yes. He, because J.J. can be a jerk in a good way, then I think that if they didn't have that guy, and we know the Pelicans for a long time, we've said, where's the jerk? Where's the asshole? J.J. is enough. He can smell it. Again, he's the streak. He wants it to go on, and he's going to put it in these guys' ears. I guarantee J.J. is going to be the hall monitor. Go your ass to bed. We got a game. You know, we got practice tomorrow. Go to bed. Who's out?
I didn't leave my family in Brooklyn for this shit. We're gonna fucking win it. Yeah, that's what I can see too. You're right. Yeah. That first,
I don't give a fuck who's entertaining down at the at Club Disney. Get your ass in here tonight. We're gonna watch some film, and I think that having JJ is an advantage that a lot of these other teams may not have. I mean, who does that for the Grizzlies? Who's going to be that guy in their locker room who holds everybody accountable? Who does that for San Antonio now? Because DeMar DeRozan's not that vocal guy. The rest of those guys, DeJounte Murray is not that guy. Sacramento, who's that guy? So at least in the Pelicans, you have three veteran guys who have, in Derek Favors, who's been deep in the playoffs before, in JJ, who's played in the finals, played in conference finals, in Drew Holiday, who's at least won a couple of playoff series in his career. That's an advantage in and of itself to what teams that they're competing against for that eighth spot. All right, let's move on to the next question. This one is from FM Sammy, talking rotations. After the starters, which guys need to play well the most? Let's start with Ollie this time.
Well, yeah, we've already given the nod to J.J. Redick. He's going to be vital off that bench, and you got to think Alva's going to close with him in important games down the stretch as well. So the other two, I think, to me are obvious. Josh Hart, he's going to see a lot of time. In an open, kind of chaotic environment, he's the perfect guy you want out there because he's willing to guard anybody, right? We've seen him bang with centers in the post, and he's fearless on the rebounds or on the glass to grab those important rebounds. So I think he's going to play a lot of minutes. And the third guy, for a shortened playoff rotation when Gentry decides to go that right, Melly, I think you got to use some big. And while he could probably insert Jackson Hayes in moments to either change up, you know, maybe some of the pace or something along those lines, or maybe take advantage of a matchup, I think Melly's going to be the one he leans on the hardest amongst the bigs off the bench.
Kevin, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the two that he picked. And I'll throw in a third guy that's maybe like, not being considered as much, as I think Etuan Moore might have a solid role in this, because you're going to have to play more guys than you had during the regular season because, you know, the games are more compressed. They're tighter together. And I just feel like his shooting and his veteran leadership and his like inflappability on the court, is something that's going to be important. It's something that Gentry knows he can rely on. I think you'll see him get some minutes in there over other guys because of what he brings. I think he's, you know, obviously more playable than Frank Jackson in this scenario. And I think he's, you know, more playable than Darius Miller because he provides that shooting that Darius Miller would give you, but he also is not hesitant and he'll drive, and he got that nice floater game, and he's just a calming presence in the locker room and on the court. So I think he could have, you know, a nice resurgence to the season in this stretch, and then into the playoffs if we get into the playoffs. But I agree 100% with Josh Hart and Melly being big keys off the bench.
Yeah, shooting is going to be at a premium in this, but it always is But I think as guys come back and they're rusty, teams that have guys who are just natural knockdown shooters will have an advantage in that in trying to get their offense going. So I do agree that Etuan is going to get his moments and his opportunities. So we'll see what Uncle E can do in that. The next question is from Riley Patrick 87. I think we've answered it pretty much. He knows that the rotation will be deeper. And we talked pretty much about the depth of the Pelicans matching up with competition. So I think we got to you, Patrick. If we didn't, just let us know and we'll address it another time. But yeah, those were most of the questions. I think the last thing we got from Mr. Low-Key E, who needs to be the MVP through these eight games? Should it be Zion or Ingram? I guess we've kind of answered this, but is there somebody who that you could see being – I mean, that's not this team, in my opinion. You know, I guess I'll say that there isn't really an MVP of this team because it is such a collective. It needs all these guys to work together. You can't really remove one of them and make it work.
Pelicans almost lost that game against the Jazz when, you know, B.I. absolutely erupted, right? And we thought he hit a game winner, but they still almost lost that one. So, no, I agree. I think it takes several of these guys to play well, these top guys to play well for them to win. So, yeah, it's got to be kind of a team MVP type of award mentality, I think.
Kevin? No, did we lose Kevin?
Did we lose Kevin?
He's still on. I don't know. Did he mute? I don't know. Okay. Well, yeah, so I think that covers it. As we said, July 1st, we'll find out what the traveling rosters are. Players are already being tested, and they will be tested daily once they get to Orlando. So we'll be watching that as well, and we'll see what happens. And I'm certain we'll be back this week to talk about those rosters and what those matchups could look like. Ali, any final thoughts before we head out?
Yeah, I'm just knocking on wood. We don't see Woj or Shams say, and blank so-and-so has tested positive for the coronavirus with the New Orleans Pelicans, right? 16 of, 302 that were tested on the first day were tested positive. So let's hope that number stays pretty much at zero this point forward.
Yeah, and as we talked about earlier this week on the podcast with, please help me with his name, and because sometimes I just forget names. We were talking about the virus, Ali, come on.
With who? But, with the doctor?
Yeah. From NOLA.com.
Oh, Jeff Asher. Yeah.
Jeff Asher, yeah. Yes, thank you. So we talked with Jeff, and he said the rate needed to be around 5%. That's where you want to be, 5% or less. So this 16 out of however many was less than that. It was right around five.
It was right at five, yeah.
Yeah, so that's, we'll see what happens over the weeks to come with that. Kevin, do you have any final thoughts before we get out?
Yeah, sorry, I missed that last bit. You guys, I got booted. I've been having modem problem all day. Like I said, I think you, Grubb, and I for sure in the same boat is that I don't think that this play-in tournament and this playoff should be happening. I think the season should be over considering everything going on in the world right now. But I am looking forward to watching basketball. I'm going to enjoy it. And, I hope if they started, it gets off without a hitch. I just don't really see it happening. But I'm going to be rooting along as it goes. And, you know, I got a good feeling that if we are able to play this out, we'll at least get in that playoff with Memphis, if not into the playoffs itself. So I think it'll be a good building point for next season. And I can't wait for that season to start for sure.
Yeah. My last thing.
Who
am I echoing through? Was that Kevin? Did I go through Kevin's office?
Might've been.
Well, my last thing would just, yeah, it was weird. I would just think that I just want fans to be really appreciative and think again about, we've seen a lot of conversation about people saying, you know, athletes should be happy that they can do this and earn this money and everything. I think we just need to be kind of grateful that if we get basketball back, that these athletes, these coaches, these personnel and the staffers at these stadiums and the Disney parks, all that, they are putting on a sacrifice for our entertainment. They are separating themselves from their families. They are, you know, putting themselves literally in harm's way in order to provide some entertainment to this country in a very difficult time. So I think that we should be thankful for that, that they are willing to do that. We should be hopeful that they stay healthy and err on the side of caution. And if something does shut this down, I think that we need to remember not to be angry and not to take this out on anybody else, because we're all going through this together. They are part of the community just as we are. So, yeah, that's ultimately my thing is we all have our concerns. Like Kevin said, I would rather them not be doing this. But if they are, I'm going to appreciate it, and I'm going to take it as a gift and not as something that I am owed as a part of the media or as a fan. And I just hope everybody else takes that viewpoint as well, so that we can enjoy this for what it is rather than for what it is not.
Well said.
Good job.
So with that said, please go check out birdrights.com. Check out my article and all the other ones that are up there as well. Also, go rate us for the Bird Calls on whatever platform you listen to our podcast. Make sure you rate us. Give us the 5 stars. Hit us up. And stay tuned. So for Kevin Berrios and Ali Cosell, I am David Grubb. And until the next time, as Preston would say, let's go Cubs.
For listening to the Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today.